Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 5 of 4 J's and a Comic. Tonight, we're going to be discussing Kick-Ass in all of its many forms.
In all of its ass-kicking glory. Wait, did you already say glory?
No, not yet.
Okay, I wanted to be the only one to say glory. I wanted it to be a glory black hole, so that I'm the only one that says glory.
That's awesome.
You just had to put glory hole in there.
Just first, I want to say spoilers.
Yeah. Spoilers. All kinds of spoilers. Spoilers for the comics, spoilers for the movies.
If you haven't seen the first Kick-Ass movie, it's been 4 years, so you've had plenty of time to watch it.
Yeah, you're shit out of luck.
But the first spoiler I think I do want to share right off out of the gate is the first Kick-Ass movie is based off the comic book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So actually, let's start there.
Let me ruin that for you.
Going around, everyone has seen this movie in this room.
Naturally.
Yeah, I actually watched it this afternoon.
What did you all think of it the first time you saw it? And I'll start with Joe.
I was so happy with it, except for the opening credits, which made it look like a romantic comedy. You know, flying through the clouds with the titles going through. Wait, this is Kick-Ass, right?
Yeah, I totally thought that it was something else.
That he gets like the shit kicked out of him on an hourly basis. And then, yeah, the third act, like everyone's probably going to say, is where it just went in such a different direction.
And now, Justin, you hadn't read the comic when you saw it.
Yeah, that's correct. I hadn't. I saw the movie first. It was something that we rented. We didn't see it in the theater. I remember being disappointed because I felt like it's, but not because the movie wasn't good, but because the movie wasn't what I thought it was going to be. I think I thought it was going to be this sort of silly, goofy, you know, comic book story of this kid that, because of the way that they promoted the movie, not knowing that it was, you know, I think I vaguely knew that it was based on a comic book, but it wasn't like comic books weren't even really in the periphery of things that I was interested in or doing at the time. But I enjoyed the movie. I remember liking it, just thinking that, you know, it was a bit like I was disappointed with sort of how they.
You were thinking that it wasn't going to be as dark or.
Yeah. Like, I think that surprised me, but I was also really happy with that. And that was one of the things that I enjoyed was that it was so dark. But I remember it being advertised sort of very much, you know, it was kind of funny and a little bit Matrixy. And, you know, you're talking about, what is it? What's the guy's name? Christopher Mintz-Plasse or.
McLovin.
Yeah, so you got McLovin in it, right? And you're coming off of like Superbad, and he had been in a couple other movies where he was
ridiculous at this point.
Right, right. And so that's, you sort of think, okay, it's going to be more of a comedy. And then it gets really dark. And it wasn't that it got dark that bothered me. It was that it just wasn't what I thought the movie was going to be. Now, going back.
Hold that thought.
Okay.
John, you had read the comic as well before you saw the movie, correct?
Yes, I had.
Okay, and what was your initial take on it?
I thought that it was pretty faithful all the way until about the third act, barring the fact that it had to be PG-13, so it cut out.
It was R.
Certain things. Was it R? Yeah. Was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they, I guess it kind of had to be pretty.
That's true.
I don't know. Well, then I guess that leaves open some even more questions, because there's some things that they left out that were in the comic book that were not in the movie that weren't really more or less gory than what we had already seen and would be totally welcome in an R rating that just should have been there that weren't.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, I think I enjoyed the movie. I liked the comic book a whole lot more. Well, and
Pause right there.
Well, yeah.
I, having read the comic, and that's actually where I first met Joe, was he first came in the store to buy Kick-Ass.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, without
the first that, one was finishing up, and I think we were looking for the
variants and stuff. Variants, yeah. So probably without that comic, this podcast wouldn't exist. Is, you know, I met everyone kind of through Joe. And when I watched the movie, granted, it had been maybe a year since I had finished reading the comic. And I went out of there absolutely hating the movie.
Hmm.
And I rewatched it Monday night. And I hadn't seen it since. But I rewatched it Monday night. And it was strange to me how much stuff actually was in the movie that was in the comic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Except for the third act. The unfortunate thing was what they changed in the third act, I thought, neutered the whole movie. And made it so it missed the whole mark for me of what the Kick-Ass comic was actually about.
Oh, yeah.
So that being said, let's get to, you know, a brief, quick review of the comic. Who wants to start?
Why don't we start with Joe again?
Okay. So I picked this up when I was living in Maine, and I was looking for something to get my girlfriend into, and she wasn't into the superhero stuff. And this was new, first issue, and I thought, okay, this is going to be real enough that she's not going to balk at it. And superhero. I broke up with her later, so I can do that.
Was that the girl that you used to come in with here when I first met you? Or was,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the blonde?
Yeah. Yeah. She would spend money on variants.
That was really personal. That was really personal. Is that the girl you used to come in? That was really personal, man.
Oh, well, the thing about having the store is like, it's like being almost like how the bartender used to be. You get to know, you know, couples when they come in, you know them as a couple. And then when they're no longer coming as the couples, you don't want to be like, what happened?
Right.
You know, so it's. Oh. It's this weird dynamic, you know, and then you see what
there's an entire podcast behind.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, you could, and then you could prescribe comics for them to read based on their situation.
Oh, I have done that.
Oh, your girlfriend was a raging asshole. Give her this. I don't know. Give her the Hulk. She's like the Hulk, right? Not that the Hulk's a raging asshole, but I think you get my point.
He has his moments.
Give him the Spider-Man where Gwen Stacy dies.
So, yeah. Shit. There you go.
There's an uplifting story.
So what did you think about Kick-Ass?
So when I first read it, I knew that I had to make like everyone else read this comic. It is so well written, so original at the time. And of course, you know, Romita Jr.'s art is always spectacular. And the fact that it could be so incredibly graphic was a lot of fun.
The only bad thing about it when it came out in comics, and that's true of most Mark Millar stuff, is it takes forever between issues. I mean, I'm not talking like the normal 30 to 45 days that you get normally between a comic. It is like, starts out, first issue comes out, second one comes out in a month. Then the third one, it's about 2.5 months. Then it's 4 months. And then, you know, it's 6 months between issues. So you really lose a lot of momentum on a lot of stuff that he's done.
Mm.
And, you know, rolling through this, I thought, about the first 4 or 5 issues were really fun. You know, it's the joke about, you know, this kid wanting to become a real life superhero. Why don't real life superheroes exist? Well, because you have no training and you get your ass kicked, you know.
Yes.
And
repeatedly.
And if you didn't learn by getting hit by a car first and, you know, making your single father be at the hospital with you for 6 months, and you didn't learn your lesson then, you know, so then as soon as you get out, you put it back on. So you get your ass kicked again. And I'm like, what is wrong with this kid? You know?
Well, he does learn his lesson after the first time. He, you know, burns his comic books and the suit and says, I'm never doing that stupid shit. You're right,
but it was in him, you know, the seed had been planted. He couldn't get away from it.
Like, but I mean, it was like a month later, I'm back out on patrol.
Yeah.
I like the line where he says, just like any serial killer would know, dreaming about it only lasts for so long. You're fantasizing about it only lasts for so long. Pretty soon, you got to just do it. It's just like, it's a really sort of dark line, but actually makes a lot of sense for that sort of uncontrollable countercultural urge that he had to dress up like a superhero and go out there and fight crime.
So what was really nice for me was when Big Daddy and Hit Girl are introduced around issue 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that the only way that a real life superhero could actually work is if it was a kid that was trained her whole life to do this.
And we're killing people left and right.
Yeah.
No, like, oh, there's always a way. I won't. Loss of life and all that uppity shit. It's like in real life, that's not real.
Yeah, it's not.
Not realistic at all.
No, they're almost sociopathically brutal murderers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, especially when you get into the later series, it's like, man, Hit Girl is dark.
Yeah, they crush the guy.
Crazy.
Yeah, they crush the guy in the car crusher, and right, you know, the sort of the last panel after the panel shows his head getting crushed, and then sort of the blood oozing out. The last panel is Hit Girl going, "What a fucking douche!" Right?
And they really picked her up in the movie. I think totally stole the entire thing. And
she was so good. She was so much like her character in the comic
book. Yeah, definitely the best thing of that movie.
Absolutely. Made her a star, made that actress a star.
Yeah, I mean, she's quite good. She's been in a couple other things since then. She's really... I'm looking forward to seeing her again in this new movie, although it's going to be a little weird because the gap in time from when the movies were filmed in comparison to when the story's supposed to take place, she's going to be a lot bigger. Right, she's going to look a lot older because she's kind of right at that age where they grow a bunch.
Yeah.
You know, and so she's going to be like a young girl now or like a young woman now instead of like a little kid.
That would be my
wearing the schoolgirl outfit with the katanas is going to mean
a lot of different things. Like, she was, there was nothing sexual about her in this first movie at all. And she's, I mean, I don't know how old she is now, but I mean, as she gets older and older, that's going to start to be something that's an element they're going to have to dance with.
She was in Dark Shadows with Johnny Depp, I believe that was called.
Yep.
And she plays sort of this teen angst, 14, 15 year old. And she's grown up quite a bit.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting
to see. I really enjoyed her in Let the Right One In. That's a
God, that
such an amazing movie. Have you seen the Swedish one?
Yeah.
That's like the best vampire movie ever.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, okay. So back to Kick-Ass.
Our thoughts have totally been derailed.
Yeah. And you know who she always reminds me of?
Let's just finish the thought. Let's just get it out.
The girl from Lazy Town, the kids show.
I don't know.
Pink haircut because in the movie she had the purple hair, like the exact same
color. Oh, the one with the weird faced dudes, like the rubber faced guys.
Yeah, all the rubber people. Totally creepy show. Yeah.
It was a totally creepy show.
That was, I think, one thing that they really was a big disappointment for me between the movie and the comic book were the costumes.
Yeah.
I liked her having just long brown hair pulled back instead of the purple hair that was short and getting in the way all the time. I thought that her outfit was similar-ish, but a little bit less overdone. Mm-hmm. I think that they, and John mentioned this to me when we were talking earlier, about how really, really different Big Daddy's outfit is.
Oh, and it's completely
too much like Batman.
Yeah, I absolutely hated that.
He even did the... the 60s Batman,
which voice. And Captain again, Kirk that, silly that totally bullshit. Yeah. Destroyed the movie for me was when he was doing that.
Yeah.
And JP and I were talking about that last night, and John was saying, go back and reread the dialogue. You'll see the bold where he's pausing and emphasizing words. And I'm like, when I read it, I never got that.
But he does. He has an odd pattern of bold because typically you'll bold things that are emphasized or where they're raising their voice.
Mm-hmm.
But he has sort of an odd... If you were to read it louder each time or pause or emphasize each time that the text was bold, it would have a sort of odd, choppy feel to it more than Hit Girl. Because, I mean, all comic books use bold periodically, but his was like in one thought bubble, there was like three or four words that were bold. It was just weird. And so I went into that after having read it, watched the movie, and then reading it again for the podcast, I can remember thinking to myself, wow, there's got to be some reason they went that way. And that, I think, is why. But then again, that's probably really reaching. But I think the biggest problem, I think the biggest misstep costume-wise was Red Mist's costume. Red Mist's costume in the comic book was cool. Red Mist's costume in the movie was fucking terrible.
I actually liked it in the movie better.
It really didn't really bother me.
Really? Oh,
but the funny thing was when we had that conversation about the bolding and the word bubbles, that led into like an hour-long, ultra-nerdy conversation about comic book lettering.
Yes, yes.
The things that you learn when you hang out at the shop.
That's it, man. I learn all kinds of fun stuff.
I feel like the comic father is way more... He's a more serious kind of guy than Nick Cage played it. Nick Cage kind of played it almost sort of like... There's a bit of Clark Kent in there, sort of a bit of aloofness that you get, like, oh, hoity-doity-do, you know, and you realize that the comic, I just think he was a much more serious character.
Yeah, and, much more dark. And the whole, his motivations for things,
that was like, that was a really interesting reversal. Yeah.
And then that, to me, was what made the Kick-Ass comic so great and killed the movie for me was the reveal.
Yeah, that he was like a... That the story that she told is real. And not...
The reveal in the movie and the original story he told was that he was a cop that was set up by the mob and his wife was killed. So he had to take the daughter and raise her to become this killer. Where in the comic, it is revealed, I was an accountant. I hated my wife. I hated my life. I took my daughter and we've lived this.
Yeah, I didn't want her to have a normal life. I wanted her to have an extraordinary life. And earlier on, they make mention of this big case that her father carries around.
Yeah.
And we're all assuming that it's full of money because Hit Girl's like, well, I don't know what's in there, but we fund everything with what the, whatever's in there. And you're thinking, why doesn't she just say money? As it comes out when he says, hey, I'm just a comic book guy. Like, right. I'm just like you, Dave, kick-ass. And they crack open the thing, and it's just full of rare variants and stuff. And that's how he's been funding their whole superhero crusade against some random mobster he chose to be their bad guy.
Plus, they steal money from the people that they kill as well.
Right, exactly. They collect. But I just love that they're funding their crazy superhero crusade with rare comic books. Yeah. Like, that's freaking awesome.
Now, I will say, I am impressed he was able to hold on to his Amazing Fantasies 15.
Yeah. And then Avengers number one and all the...
Oh, yeah. And still pay for all those guns.
Well, in the moment that they open that up, Red Mist starts to geek out over them all. They're like, oh, my God. They're like, we're busy here. We're trying to kill people. What's going on?
When I first read this, I guess this came out in 2009. Mm-hmm. And so at the time, I had a 9-year-old daughter, which now I have a 12-year-old daughter. But I digress. Justin and I both have young daughters, early teens. And it really resonated with me was what an asshole you would have to be to steal your daughter from the mother to make her a sociopath. And I thought that the Kick-Ass movie glossed over that too much with we're going with the cop, the good cop that was framed by the mob and not some asshole dad. And that, like you said, and then that started the having problems in the third act, like Joe did.
Well, and the friend Marcus, they kind of mixed up the father and Marcus from the comic books into one character in the movie. And then made Marcus a separate character who wasn't really anything but just a partner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because later on, Marcus is like comes in and steps in as the stepfather.
Right. After she.
Right. And wasn't even friends with Big Daddy. He was actually the investigating police officer on the kidnapping. And he ended up stepping in and helping her mom survive all that and was constantly approached by the mob and was a good cop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that just felt like it fit better. Everything it was almost like super crazy too cliche the way that they did it in the movie. And in the comic book, it's so brilliant. I mean, it's just Mark Millar. I mean, come on.
He's you have
so
to wonder good. why they made those.
Yeah, it was such a big reversal. You know, taking a very serious character with a very like meh sort of motivation and making a very meh sort of attitude with a very serious motivation.
Well, that's why I was asking Justin. Having not read the comic before you saw it, was that a point of contention or did it not even enter your mind when you saw that?
I don't know if it entered my mind all that much. And here's why. Because right around the same time that I actually read the comic book, I had probably gone through 80 comics or, 80 books from the Walking Dead series. Mm-hmm. And having watched the TV show first, finding out it was a comic and thinking, oh, it's probably a year old, 2 years old or whatever, and realizing it's 10 years old and there's all this history. And then reading the comics and seeing what a huge story change they had made where it's the same characters, but the stories are different enough, but they're still very well written. You know, after reading the comic, I remember thinking to myself, why did they do that? You know, why did they make it like this? Well, there must have been, I kind of just wrote it off as, well, that's Hollywood. You know what I mean?
I think that as much as there's perpetual challenges in getting your vision out in print as a comic, from the brainchild of the writer, working through with artists, working with publishers, working with everybody to get it to a place where it's going to come out and be seen, that there is less garbage there, although there's plenty. To try and hold on to your original vision. But there's way more trouble with that, I think, when it comes to film. Especially when something starts as a comic and then goes into film. Because we don't have any idea, nothing to compare when somebody just writes a script and sends it in,
Well, but we as comic readers, we accept culture of comic art and comic storytelling, right? There's a convention, meaning we understand why things happen a certain way because we've kind of grown to expect that those types of things happen in sort of these comic book worlds. Probably what happened was they tested this in front of audiences and the audiences went, we don't like the dad or, the dad seems scary or something like that. Like, why is the dad this way? I mean, you never know why that stuff was changed. And I don't follow, I'm not reading Mark Millar's blog and finding out, any of that. I read the comic. I saw the movie. I didn't think the movie was that horrible. You guys keep talking about the third act. And I think to myself, it had kind of that movie ending.
Yeah, you know, well, I think the thing
they
is
had to
is
blow
that
something up.
If you watch, I mean, if you've read Mark Millar's other stuff, like Wanted, and did Wanted come before or after?
Wanted Kansas? Came before.
That's what I thought.
That was another movie that was just.
Oh God, let's not go there. The
premise was so good, but yeah. The ending, you're just like, what?
But, so the thing about Mark Millar with his creator-owned work is that they're almost always, at least Kick-Ass and Wanted, are like love letters to comic book readers. They are aimed at people who have seen the same things over and over the years, that have become apathetic and have seen the same tropes, the same twists, the same motivations over and over with half the time the same damn characters, because the same characters have been here for frickin' ever. Mm-hmm. And so Millar comes out and says, and now for something completely different. And that makes a big difference for us comic book readers, because we're his audience. He's very targeted. It's not like people in the world will appreciate this because it's a good story, although it is, and they should, but it holds special significance and power to people who are comic book readers. Would you agree?
Yeah.
And they're very aimed at the comic, especially Wanted is way aimed at the comic book readers.
Well, but yeah. And even Kick-Ass, there's many, many references to comic books that are there hanging out in a comic book store.
But it's not even just references. It's like throwing a curveball to what we're expecting.
It's very meta. It's very meta.
Yeah, yeah.
Wanted was really meta.
Yeah, well, I never read Wanted, but hopefully that'll be on my list.
Yeah, it's a good
and,
one.
And even Kick-Ass, when especially in the later ones, like the Hit Girl series and the Kick-Ass 2, when Dave is telling Hit Girl, oh, I can't go out because I'm writing this article for Newsarama about why there hasn't been many superheroes introduced in the last 50 years.
Right, compared to the first 50 years. And
I mean, it's really like a commentary on comic book culture. These books are.
There's some point about, you know, what is this? There's some silver comment that she makes as well, or somebody makes in reference to what are this? Is
the, oh, yeah. He was wanting to be nicer. And she's like, it's not the
silver age. What is this, the silver age, right? Yeah.
So we want to move on to Hit Girl?
Well, I'm just to wrap it up, watching the movie, we sat down and we had a little family movie night where it was the first time Jamie and Taylor had actually watched it. And, you know, now Taylor's almost 13. So, and she absolutely loved Hit Girl. You know, it's, I can totally relate to her kind of thing. And I'm like, I hope not. Yeah, right. And Jamie loved it. So I was just wondering if I was being too hard on it, approaching it from having read the comic first and then going, I hated the third act.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Or was it
universally hated by the non-comic reading public?
Well, so it's such a great and unique idea, but its rough edges have been sanded off. It's the same thing happened with Scott Pilgrim, which is one of my favorite movies ever, and probably one of the most well-realized comic book stories in movie form. But at the same time, a lot of its rough edges were shaved off or filed down. It's just not, and it's almost like they're not willing to take the risk at the movie-going masses to see, will they be able to roll with this level of like, hey, we're going to try something different. Hey, we're going to throw something in your face that you're not expecting. Hey, maybe this is going to make you uncomfortable, but it's an interesting story. Like, the comic books are always throwing that sort of shit out, especially the good ones. And movies often built from those comic books seem like they go out of their way to smooth it out and make it more digestible and easier and, by proxy, way more predictable.
I was, with this movie, I was even more into it, the meta part, than most movies. Like, I couldn't tell you who the screenwriter for the Wolverine movie that we saw last week was, but for this one, I was looking forward to it because the screenwriter was Jane Goldman, who is married to Jonathan Ross, who's a huge comic book nerd. Mm. She wrote the screenplay for the Stardust movie, which I thought was actually better than
the book.
The book.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, and so I was like all waiting for this to be like, and I knew that she worked very closely with Mark Millar on it. And then when we get the movie, it was such a letdown to me. But hopefully with the second one, which I just saw the amazing trailer for this morning, and we'll talk about a little later after the break.
Yeah, we're going to watch the trailer over the break, because I haven't seen the Red Band trailer yet. None of us have, except for John.
Which will be, hopefully, make up for what I was disappointed in the Kick-Ass movie versus the comic.
Well, I mean, so it's obviously, if there's a Red Band trailer, then it's rated R also.
Yes.
So then hopefully they will keep in alignment with some of the things that happen in the book, because, man, Kick-Ass 2 is arguably way darker than the first.
When a character's name is the motherfucker. It has to be an R-rated movie.
Although the fight between Mother Russia and like, and Hit Girl is awesome.
Yeah, I am very looking forward to that. And we'll,
that final scene.
So we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and discuss a little more of the comic of Hit Girl and then Kick-Ass 2, and then maybe give our opinions on the Red Band trailer. And then after you finish listening to this, we'll go see the Kick-Ass movie because it'll actually be out by the time the podcast is up.
Or almost out tomorrow night.
So we're back from our 60s Batman interlude.
No, never mind. Actually, I will say that Voivod does a cover of that song on Dimension Hatress if you bought the CD after its original release. And it's actually pretty cool.
Like a metal cover?
Yeah, but it's not overly metaled out. It's very much na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. So,
yeah. That's awesome.
Sweet.
We're going to be discussing now Hit Girl. While it was the third in the Kick-Ass published chronologically, it is the second and kind of serves as an interlude between Kick-Ass 1 and 2.
Yeah, I was going to say it really is an interlude. It doesn't have as much meat. It's not as punchy. It's definitely got a lot of good. It's very entertaining, but it doesn't hit any serious plot points.
It's the Dune Messiah of the Kick-Ass series.
Yeah.
But having a 12-year-old daughter, like I do,
who is the age Hit Girl is in Hit Girl,
and it kind of had this resonation with me where she's trying to learn how to fit in.
Right. So you love the Batman homage scene.
Well, I like the whole, like, learning to fit in, you know, like, so she knows how to kill people in multiple ways, knows everything about guns and knives and everything, but has no idea how to fit in with
those
normal
plastic bitches at school. Give her a run for her money.
Right.
And I really liked how, you know, after two issues of this, she's like, okay, I'm going to treat it like an undercover mission. And so she goes.
And then she handles it.
Yeah. And she goes to the mall and gets new clothes and talks to the girls. Oh, have you heard the new Justin Bieber album and seen Glee? And they're like, we still hate you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So in order to solve this, we get this homage to Batman where she knocks one of the girls out.
I love this.
Tases her in the
bathroom.
Yeah. Tases her in the bathroom. And the girl wakes up and she's dangling off the roof.
Like over the front of the school.
Yeah. And Hit Girl tells her, okay, you're going to get your friends and you're going to have a sleepover with me now. And what? And she literally releases her where she falls into a garbage truck. And she says, this truck comes by at 4:15 every afternoon. Keep this shit up with me and I'll release you 2 minutes earlier. And that moment to me just, I literally was laughing out loud.
Oh, that was probably one of the best, if not the best scene in that entire series right there.
I liked it. I think I liked this way more than you guys did.
Oh, I liked it a lot.
I really enjoyed it.
And what
I love the duality of it. It seems like this is sort of like the other side of the coin, right? It's all of the waiting. It's all of the normal. So
yeah, it just, to me, it felt like it was settling into like a serialized television show kind of thing where they're setting up
I see. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It didn't seem like it was going somewhere or there was a time limit on how long this all was going to happen.
It wasn't flawless.
No, but it felt like they were setting up their own like little Buffy the Vampire Slayer scenario where they hang out and then they go kill guys on Tuesdays and Thursdays in the evenings. And it's just kind of like, what's the story here?
It was very much her plan and it could have taken, you know, as long as it needed.
Yeah. What I really liked was when I started reading Kick-Ass 2, when you first see her, when you first see Hit Girl, she's telling Kick-Ass, I've given it up. And I'm wondering, retired. How would she have given it up that's so ingrained into her?
Right, and then this explains it. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. It makes sense then, I guess, more now that I know that they came out Kick-Ass 2 and then Hit Girl. Because I read Kick-Ass, and then Kick-Ass 2 came out. I said, hey, Joe, should I check it out? And Joe's like, no, I'm a big hater and a battle axe. Kick-Ass 2 sucks. And I was like, all right, I trust you, Joe, because you know more about comics than I do. I just never got it. And haven't checked out Kick-Ass until now. That's the reason.
I was not impressed with the first issue of the second book. It did not ring well for me.
I mean, it was a crescendo, definitely, on the second one.
Getting to read Hit Girl first made a huge difference coming back to it now.
But what I loved about the Hit Girl series was it's basically carnage throughout all five issues.
So much.
Her going through and basically taking out the rest of the mob.
Mm-hmm. She even says she says at one point that she shoved a grenade up some guy's ass to blow him to pieces.
She was,
showed the aftermath.
She had mapped out every cool way that she was going to kill guys, like 48 times. Like she figured out 48 unique ways to kill people and was sort of tallying them off.
Well, she had like her shit list that everybody was on. She was just taking people out one at a time. And she's like, tonight we're going against the Armenians. Okay, next time it's like, whoa.
But spoilers again, what I really liked was issue 4. They all show up at her house, not because so much they don't know that she's Hit Girl, but because they're going after her stepfather, who is the only honest cop, and they assume that he's behind all of these killings and stuff that's been happening.
Right, because he had actually accosted like the lieutenant or the captain saying, I know you're being paid off. He sort of instigates it to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he basically gets on the mob's shit list because he won't be bought off. And he's vocal about not being bought off. And then all of this carnage is going on in the background with Hit Girl. And so he gets fingered for it. And so sure enough, they show up at her house trying to kick Marcus's ass. And then out comes Hit Girl.
And then issue 4 is this great cliffhanger with the mob surrounding them. They have Hit Girl and then, guns to the stepfather and the mom's face. So then 3 months later, when issue 5 finally comes out. We open up the page and Hit Girl's already drugged the mom and dad. So like,
what was she giving them?
Roofies.
Yeah. Yep. They pass out and the guys,
they've been getting roofies a lot.
And the gangsters are like, what the hell? It's like, you know, that flashy thing in Men in Black.
That's right. Because there was a scene where the wife falls asleep and they're thinking, oh, she must've fainted. And then Marcus is out and they're like, what is this?
Yeah, exactly.
And she's like, man, I was waiting for those guys to fall asleep. Yeah. All right, now I'm going to kill you all.
Yeah. Right. She was like,
it wasn't much of a cliffhanger, though, because you knew that as soon as shit got real, she was going to take out every single one of them and make them cry like little bitches.
She is so incredibly capable.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and she looked capable in the movie, but she was even more capable in the comic book. And then as the comic book moves on, she gets increasingly scarier.
Mm-hmm.
She starts to travel into the like sociopath zone.
Right. She goes next door. She's thinking about one of the ways to kill the guy. Oh my god. She goes next door. Yes. Do you have a sledgehammer, Mr. Wilson, or whatever? Yeah, just leave it out in the garage when you're done. She goes back, she walks in and like just pulverizes the guy.
And the whole time he's lying there, busted up on the ground. No. And she's just walking off in her pajamas next door.
Yeah.
And then I like it. She's having this conversation with the ghost of her father.
Right, right.
That was cool. That actually explained a lot of why she was doing what she was doing and how focused she was.
Yeah. And I love this line. The ghost of the father says, tonight should be like the end of The Godfather with a massive wave of strategic hits. And then she replies, which was another like fallout laughing moment. I feel conflicted about The Godfather. I thought it sentimentalized violent criminals and gave them a code of honor they never had in real life. And then the father's like, I meant structurally, Mr. Ebert. Right.
she's so literal about everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so great because she is a badass, but at the same time, her training came from just a geek.
Yeah.
So the dad is a geek. He's training her by reading comic books and watching movies and, and martial arts training and stuff. But like that is her homework, is to indulge in all of the violent pop culture stuff.
And then I really loved at the end, she breaks into Riker's prison and goes to death row and kills everyone on death row. And she's like, I just saved the taxpayers a lot of money.
Yeah, right.
Yes, right. Yeah, she's an animal.
So after that, she decides to hang up her Hit Girl gear. Let's say that 5 times fast. And that leads us into Kick-Ass 2.
And you're right. I think that reading Kick-Ass 2 before Hit Girl probably was a little jarring.
Mm-hmm.
I think that after reading Hit Girl, because of course, when I was reading them this time, I read them all chronologically because that felt like it made the most sense. Mm-hmm. And it certainly does. I can only imagine how I understand now better how it was kind of really weird for you when you first read that issue.
And 2 started coming out right after the movie. And I remember in the first book, it has this, and I'm still in love with the girl. I'm like, oh, they're going to bring her in just because she was popular in the movie. Oh, great.
That girl, what's her name again? Katie Dolmer, whatever. Yeah. She was a vicious, wicked bitch in the comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And she continues to be a vicious, wicked bitch. In, you know, I mean, like, I don't know. I thought that she was much, much meaner in the comic books than she was
She was a bitch.
She was an absolute bitch.
I think in the movie they used it to establish more of his secret identity. Like, she raves about how awesome Kick-Ass is, and he's sitting there in her room, and he can't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think
volunteers.
I mean, it works, but
also, you know, it makes him look. I think it makes him also look a little bit more like the goober that he is, because, you know, she thinks he's gay, and nothing wrong with that. But
that was
in the context
funny.
Of the movie, you know,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
he gets to sort of hang out and hug her, and you know,
yeah. And like John and I were talking about yesterday. The only way that you could break into a teenage girl's bedroom wearing a Kick-Ass outfit, pulling it off, revealing to yourself, hi, I'm your friend that you thought was gay, but I'm actually Kick-Ass and I'm not gay. And then the girl still ends up with you is in a movie.
Yeah.
yeah.
But I don't remember her. Doesn't she? She doesn't end up.
Well, yeah, hell yeah, man. He spends the night.
That's right. Yeah. Not if he likes comic books. No, I'm kidding. For all of you comic book readers out there, like me.
You may one day get laid.
Yes.
Hopefully tonight.
Ding.
So do we have anything else we'd like to say about Hit Girl before moving to Kick-Ass 2?
I actually liked the little sub-story where Red Mist is off learning how to be a total badass.
Oh, I totally forgot about that, yeah.
And then he fails miserably.
He doesn't even fail. He's like, fuck this, it's just too hard. I'll just hire somebody, right? And the funny thing is like, you have all of these, like, ancient Chinese secret, and, like, all these senseis, and, all, and, like, they've got him busting his ass, like, go climb this mountain to go get the blue orchid. And he's like, well, what's the significance of the blue orchid? And he makes some shit up, and then the guy next to him is like, what are you talking about? He's like, oh, I saw it in Batman.
You know, yeah, so I just told him to go to the dialogue between the two instructors. Yeah.
Right. And he's like,
if
we can get him to hang out another month, I can get that BMW I've been trying to grab. And you're like, oh. And so, and that's the thing, right? That's the thing for me in this is that the books are about this kid that goes like, why aren't there real life superheroes, right? And goes out and finds out why there aren't real life superheroes because it's fucking brutal and the real world is brutal. But all along the way, there is this amazing vigilante father and daughter that are really sort of pseudo superheroes, just filled with military training and crazy, you know, all the weapons you could possibly want. And then on the flip side of that, you have Red Mist, who is trying to be the world's biggest supervillain, but he's also kind of like the world's biggest dipshit, and that he can't even really, like, he can't even be dedicated enough to train himself. Right. And he gets taken even at that level. And what are generally supervillains are incredibly intelligent. It's usually not them that makes a mistake unless you get a monologuing. It's usually, you know, right. And so it's very much like the protagonist and the antagonist who are at the center of the story are completely unqualified to be the protagonist and antagonist in a comic book hero story. But you buy it and you really love the characters for that. So
I would argue that Red Mist continually spirals deeper into being a bitch as things go.
Well, yeah.
Like in the beginning, he's tough and he like pulls the gun out of nowhere and you're not expecting him at all. In the comic book, you're not expecting him at all.
Yeah,
don't suspect him at all in the comic books. And then bang, pulls out the gun and is like, oh, I got you. You know, it's like, whoa. And he's sort of a shitty guy, but he's kind of a badass in that first comic book a little bit. Whereas in Hit Girl and then subsequently Kick-Ass 2, he just continually spirals into having everybody else do his dirty work. And he's just a little rich brat, which I think that the casting makes more sense now for the next movie than the first movie. Because the first movie, I felt like that was a really weird casting in comparison to the character in the book. Because the character in the book felt stronger. But reading Hit Girl and Kick-Ass 2, he feels like he's a much better character for that, you know?
Yeah.
The sort of like just like little mousy, weaselly sort of guy. You know, just has that look that he can pull off, that kind of whiny little bitchy guy.
Plus he's got that lisp.
And has asthma.
Yes.
Which was a funny dialogue later on in Kick-Ass 2.
Yeah, absolutely. So it sounds like we're ready to start talking about Kick-Ass 2?
Let's start there. Kick-Ass 2 came out, like Joe was saying, about 2010, right after the first Kick-Ass movie started.
Well, it starts off with Mindy
training Kick-Ass.
Training and Marcus finding out that, you know, kind of confronting her about,
yeah,
you have Oh, are you sure you weren't with Kick-Ass All Day Training? No, Daddy, I wasn't doing that, blah, 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 blah. And then he opens up this, like, weapon stash under her closet, and he's like, I got to give it to you there. You got an AK-47 into a teddy bear, right? Which is pretty cool.
I thought that was great. Very, very funny.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting because the almost a little cavalier, Marcus, can be a little cavalier with her. But it works because he's in a precarious situation because it's not his daughter. It's not like she's from a previous marriage, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so he has sort of a tenuous place in the household. You know, she's the daughter. She's blood. And he's the long-term boyfriend, but he's still not blood. Yeah. And so he's willing to dance around. And he's worried about the mom's like psychological state.
Right, it's really about
so
the mother.
So he dances. But I still think that it works really well. Like, he's well-positioned to be a character that is kind of dancing around what she's doing and letting her get away with it enough and still being like, hey, you need to stop. But instead of like shutting her ass down, you know?
Right, right. And I think he rides that fence really well.
Yeah.
Because
he's a great character.
It's sort of that wink, wink, you know, it's like, I don't know. My daughter and I have gone out and done stuff before and it'll be like, well, don't tell your brother we did this. You know, don't tell your brother we went to a movie and got ice cream and then I let you drive or whatever. You know, it's sort of like, right.
Zachary's hopefully she's not listening.
I know. Yeah, just kidding.
You let her drive on ice cream?
Yes. All the time. Actually, it's pretty sweet, man. I have spent more time in the passenger seat in the last week than I have in my entire life. Well, no, I guess not, but yeah, it's nice when your kid drives you around to go do stuff that they want to do. It's pretty sweet.
It's a whole new thing.
Yeah.
No longer the chauffeur. That must be a nice change.
Yeah. Except for, you know, you find I have a hard time getting out of the car. Like, I get wrapped up in the seatbelt and stuff. I feel like an idiot, you know?
That's so funny.
It's on the wrong side.
Yeah, everything's on the wrong side.
So as we come into Kick-Ass 2, she basically has hung up the cape, agreed with Marcus to no longer be Hit Girl, agreed to not associate with all of the superheroes or other heroes, I guess. Yeah, they call them supers. They call them superheroes, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Which I thought that was kind of odd because there are no superpowers in this.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that was definitely weird. Now, was it Hit Girl where they put together the superhero group or was
no,
that
it was
in
Kick-Ass 2.
Kick-Ass 2. It's, yeah. They allude to it starting to happen towards the... Mm-hmm.
Talking right. about like networking on the computer and stuff.
Everybody's on MySpace.
Did you notice how it transitioned from MySpace to Twitter?
Into Facebook, yeah.
Into Facebook.
I mean, that was so weird.
Facebook into Twitter.
It was so weird to me rereading it the first one and talking about MySpace.
It's like MySpace shit. Nobody uses that anymore.
That used to be a thing, didn't it?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And now it's talking about Twitter, which is a thing right now.
Yeah, right.
Very funny. So then in the second one, there's actually supergroups getting together. And of course, the best person to have in a supergroup would be freaking Hit Girl. Because she's the baddest ass ever.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But what they've got some ex-mobster guys. They've got a day shift cop who wants to do what he can't do in his uniform at mm-hmm. nighttime. And then they've got some chick that helps girls that are drunk get home. And they got kind of like the whole range of these people. Yeah. That,
remembering Timothy, you know, the guy that...
Right, the two parents right. that their kids got, kid
and
got
I'm
kidnapped.
I'm sorry, when they did that scene, when the dad leaves the kid alone with the dog,
mm-hmm.
you knew that was going to happen. You
know, yeah, kind of.
I thought the dog was going to get stolen. I don't know. I let this shit happen to me. I mean, not that kind of stuff, but I let myself be surprised, right? I don't try to pre-guess stuff. There are moments at movies where I'm like, I mean, it's not like I'm oblivious to it. I mean, I do, I'm able to read the plot and I'm able to read the theme and I'm able to sort of go, well, I knew that was coming. But sometimes I don't. I try not to. Sometimes you have to give suspension of disbelief. And even in a comic book, sometimes you have sort of, you know, mm-hmm. give it.
Sometimes it's hard to turn that off, though. I find video games is one of the hardest places I have when it comes to that, where I played so many video games over so many years that anything comes along and it's like, okay, spatial problem solving. Here's what's going on. All right, this is there, that is there. Obviously, I got to get up there. These are my options. Bang, 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 bang. And I just figure it out really fast.
It's very rare when... I'm surprised by a puzzle solving solution.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Unless it is so ridiculously
complicated,
and you're just like, why would this even work together?
Overcomplicated.
Yeah. Stretched for this.
And so that's what it makes me think of is in video games, so much of the time I play and it's like, oh, I can figure that out in a hurry. But you sit somebody down who's never really done that before and it'll take them a half damn hour.
I was actually expecting with the Finding Timothy people. That story that he told about his son being abducted was all bullshit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was expecting...
Kind of like his friend's whole story.
Yeah, but we got that later, in a couple pages later, when, you know, this guy's telling this sob story, oh, my parents were killed, and Kick-Ass is like, wait, aren't you Marty? I've known you since we were five.
Yeah, I just saw your mom at Kmart or whatever. There's a part of it where he thinks he's kind of out there on his own. And then he finds this, you know, they're not a super group, but you know, they're masked, they're costumed vigilantes, but he's starting to see organization that either because of his age or just because of his, because he's kick-ass, you know, he doesn't, like, I don't think he has the foresight to really develop himself.
Well, and they've always wanted to have a Avengers, a Justice League. Like, they've always wanted that.
Like, as soon as he heard there were other people doing it.
Was it called Freedom or
Justice Forever?
Justice Forever, yes. So, I mean,
to justice and beyond.
What was interesting is I liked the characters that were in there, especially Captain Star, or was Stars and Stripes? What was it?
Right.
Lieutenant Star. Colonel Stars and Lieutenant Stripes.
Right. And Lieutenant, yeah. So,
which will be played by Jim Carrey.
Was Colonel Stars? Yeah. So, Colonel Stars and Lieutenant Stripes are two ex-mafia guys. And they used to be, I don't know, wet work guys or just bodyguard types or whatever. But they decided to switch things over.
Because they found Jesus.
That's right, because they found
Jesus. Like you do.
And so what was so cool about Stars is that he really was like a superhero. Like, he actually introduced Kick-Ass to the idea of, oh, let's go help at a soup kitchen. Let's do some toy drives. Let's actually help the community aside from just go out and get my ass kicked. And he, like, very clearly has the superhero, I'm not going to hurt anybody, we have our morals sort of... I mean, it's fanciful.
Unless
but
they're busting up the triad prostitution ring at their card.
Right. And then we have dogs eating nuts.
Yeah.
The
Which
dog
unfortunately isn't going to be in the movie. That made me really sad.
But the dog in the comic book is named Sophia. And what Eisenhower, he named it Eisenhower in the movie.
Yeah.
So why make those little changes like that?
Dude, who knows?
Oh, it's just weird to have a boy dog bite someone's nuts off, I guess.
Well, they're not even going to have
so much time licking their own. I mean, it's par for the course.
Have you ever seen the An Evening with Kevin Smith stuff?
Yes.
So I think that, like, that's what I go back to whenever I see some sort of weird change in a movie from a different form of
book. I was thinking
metal spiders.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. With all of the crazy Superman story, it's just like there are producers out there that are just crazy. That are just all kinds of crazy. And they're like, Sophia, no, I want that guy named Eisenhower. And people are like, all right, fine.
It'll make more sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, who cares? It's at some point.
Why didn't they name him Patton?
Right, yeah. It's wacky. Anyway, I think one of the high points was the fact that Kick-Ass 2 focused more on Dave, focused more on Kick-Ass, than that Hit Girl sort of took a back seat, and her major trial and struggle was not being involved and trying to position herself to have a normal life and not screw up her mom's mental state and stay off of Marcus's radar, but at the same time, still not alienate Dave.
And Kick-Ass 2, the series got so incredibly dark.
Well, towards the end. The beginning couple were pretty average, normal, like, hey, we're having super groups. Hey, it's all good. And then, I don't know, do we want to give spoilers away for this? Or
the Red Mist, a.k.a. now the motherfucker.
Who still wears the same outfit in the comic, by the way.
Comes back with his super villains. And basically destroys
everything.
Yeah, he destroys the Justice Forever. He destroys Dave's girlfriend, his Dave's lady love, even though she's not his girlfriend. Yeah,
bitch and hates him.
Yes. He basically just totally does terrible stuff.
Murderous rampage.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what I really liked about it was when they did the whole killed 30 people, 80 people injured, that's when it really got real. And there's the police officer they have on the take, he's like, there's nothing I can do to help you now. You know, this is like gone bigger than me. Lose my number. You know?
Yeah, yeah. There was a point where it's like, oh, wow. Red Mist is really committing to be a supervillain. He is crossing lines. He's like shooting children. He's being party to things like rape and murder and like blind random stuff. That's just no reason to do. It doesn't gain him money or anything but just press, and that's it. And he's just doing these vile, wicked things that he doesn't really need to do to accomplish his goals. But he just crosses a line where he just goes nuts, and he's just like, I'm going to burn this city to the ground.
Some men just want to see the world burn.
As we've heard.
Yeah.
I really liked, you know, how dark it got and how real it got being dark. And it kind of leads to the big climax of a superhero, supervillain battle, because all the police have been lured away by all these hundreds of explosions that the supervillains have set. But when the police reconvene, they don't care If you're a superhero, supervillain, if you're in a costume, they're taking you out.
Yeah, that's great. I like that. And you never see that in any superhero movies, is that there's always, oh, thanks, Spider-Man. It's always like, no, you're a freaking vigilante. Get in the paddy wagon. Right, like, right. And that was what was so great about this, is that they're having, because towards the end of the story, there's this big brawl between all the supervillains and all the superheroes in Times Square, which is, hopefully, if they do it right in the movie, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
But the cops show up and they're like, okay, everybody in a costume, we're arresting everybody. They don't care, good or bad. And of course, the crowd's like, no, these guys were helping us. And the cops are like, we don't care. Like, they're,
we'll sort it out breaking downtown.
The law. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was really cool. I think that Kick-Ass is really a kind of a cautionary tale, the whole bit of it, because it doesn't ever really work out well for anybody, especially at the deeper we get into the story. You know, Dave has basically created his origin story. Like, I think by the end of Kick-Ass 2, Dave is a superhero. Mm-hmm. Dave is what he wanted to be, what he was playing at in the first bit. From an emotional level. Yeah, he now has the darkness, the emotional turmoil, the motivation to push himself to a place where he can hang with a hit girl.
But it was all brought on.
All brought on by trying to be a superhero. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he put himself in the crossfire, him and his loved ones in a crossfire. It made me think back to early on when, in the first book, in the first Kick-Ass, when his mom dies from a brain aneurysm, and there's that great scene where he's like, so if you're expecting me to be like, oh, I will avenge you, and he's like, it's none of that. And like later on, shitty stuff starts happening to his friends and family.
Now he has reason to avenge them.
Now he does have that story, but he created that by putting his dumb ass out in that suit. And so it's like, I don't know, it's interesting. I am incredibly excited to start reading 3. And I got the first issue of 3 last night and agreed with John to not read it before the podcast because I really, really, really want to see what happens next.
How many issues of 3 are out?
There's just one. Just although one. It's been out for a while.
It's been out now for about 2 months. Uh-huh. And the second issue is now actually going to be in next week.
Yes! Oh, wow. Perfect timing.
But might finish it before I die.
Who knows how long it'll be before issue 3.
That's true. But I mean, do you guys agree with me? It feels like Kick-Ass on the whole is basically, don't try this. Absolutely. That's kind of the point.
No, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't glorify it. You're not
at all.
Well, it glorifies it, but it doesn't romanticize it.
Yeah, we have fun with it. They have fun with it. We have fun with it as the reader, but it's horrible what happens to these people that try and become superheroes. Mm. I'm really looking forward to the movie, and
I've always said, ever since Kick-Ass came out, the Big Daddy is the most fucked up character I've ever read in comics.
Yes, that's true. Well, in the comic version, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Kidnaps his own kid, trains her up to be a sociopath.
Brainwashes her.
Just so.
Gets her to murder, like, what she's responsible for, what, 60
brutally.
Deaths?
Yeah. Brutally. Yeah. Brutally
just murdering. Just so he can say it. She didn't have an average childhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Freaking evil. I mean, really, he's the supervillain.
Yeah.
In Hannah, the movie, I don't know what Hannah's based off of.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, it's all right. But in Hannah, you know, that she's going through this sort of training because of this genetic altering and all of this stuff. And, you know, it's a similar story, but it's not even remotely the same in that you have a father who's training his daughter to survive. Mm-hmm. And stay.
And they're
alive.
Having to do that because they're under pressure from the government and stuff like that.
She's defensively.
Yeah.
You know, and this is very much the opposite. So, but yeah, you know, I have to agree with you, John. It is, as a father.
Yeah, as you and I both have young daughters who are about that age.
I would teach her how to defend herself, but not to blatantly go out and
murder some
today
people.
Yeah. While we're talking about, you know, metal, I want you to kick every boy you see in the nuts in a different way. You know, it's not like,
you know,
that,
for
right?
me, and then curb stomp them. Yeah. Yes. And break their
you
fingers.
Know, for me, for Taylor, you play GTA, so this is what we're gonna go try out tomorrow.
Right.
Right. Like, this is how you lose cops. Practice. Mm-hmm.
Daddy needs a new car.
If you hit 10 kids in a row, it's a combo bonus.
Shit.
Right before this, we just watched the 4.5-minute Red Band trailer that they just put on YouTube today. And I am now very excited about seeing the movie Kick-Ass 2.
I am a lot more so, because going in, hearing that they were doing a number 2 and having, you know, only just started the comic series for 2 and being so disappointed by the end of the first movie was just gritting my teeth.
As long as there's no movie. Fucking jetpack, I'll be happy.
Mm. I hate that fucking jetpack.
Oh my god, yeah. What was that? So I mean, just so out of place. There's absolutely no reason to be there.
That was the giant spider in the third act.
That was the giant spider. Yes. I guarantee you there was some stupid producer who's like, I really want to make sure that there's a jetpack. I want them to fly away on a jetpack at the end of the movie into the sunset and stand on a roof and reveal each other's identities to each other. That's what I want in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if it wasn't going to happen in this one, it was going to happen in another one. That was the giant spider. It was so stupid.
Yeah. Whereas, like, can we have Kick-Ass say, allow myself to introduce myself? Wait, somebody already used that?
Whereas in the comic, it was so powerful after Hit Girl kills all the mafia people. And then when she's done, she breaks down crying.
Could you give me a hug?
Yeah, can you give me a hug? My daddy just died. You know, and that was just, it hit me.
Oh, and the way that she killed them was better in the comic. Mm-hmm. Actually, did you notice that she killed, the way that she killed the head main mob boss, Frank Genovese, was it? She, like, takes a cleaver and cuts his head in half, right. Basically. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is that she kills him and then kills the rest of the guys in the room. It didn't have that sort of predictable progression of, now I kill the bad guys on the first floor and I work my way up, like final fight or something, you know, and then I kill all the bodyguards and then it's just me and the boss and then I fight the boss. And it's like, no, like, so much more stumbling through and organic and good the way that they did it in the comic. I love the way that worked, where she's like, okay, I have an opportunity to kill this guy, happens to be the boss, bang, kill the boss, then drop down, use his body as a shield, kill everybody else. Like, that was, and then that moment of tenderness, like you said, John, which was just lost in the movie with that stupid freaking flight. Oh my. Moving on. We could rig and rage about that jetpack.
And the mini machine gun, mini Gatlin guns.
And a jetpack.
Yeah. But the tiny little Gatlin guns, the caliber on those things would have been the size of a toothpick.
No, they could have been 22s. Could have been 22 caliber. But they would have blown them all over the place.
Yeah, still just goofy.
Still, but
just
anyway, just it's goofy. A movie. Yeah. It wasn't. I think you're right. This movie, the comic, is too dark for average Hollywood going user. And even the way that they sold the movie as this sort of,
yeah, you went in there expecting much more lighthearted stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to the next movie. Hopefully they do a good job with it. Yeah.
And you'll get a quickie review of this.
You would definitely get a quickie review of it. Yeah, absolutely. Next week. Cool.
So next week, a little preview, we will not have Justin.
No.
QQQ.
But we will have Professor Sean O'Rourke in here. And then we will be talking about J. Michael Straczynski's Midnight Nation.
Which he wrote a paper on, right?
Yes. Like a thesis on. So
that's that. I'm really looking forward to that.
I feel pretty good that I can only be replaced by a professor.
You know, not everyone, Justin, you're going to enjoy not being on the podcast and being able to listen to it.
Yes. I'll be enjoying it while I'm in L.A. working. So
yeah, it'll be fun. That's cool. I never get to listen to the podcast without having edited them. All the podcasts I'm on and edit. By the time they come out, I'm like, I don't want to hear it again. I'm done. Like, I envy all y'all.
All right, guys. We'll talk to everyone next week. Okay, everyone, we will be back next week where you can listen to our wonderful, sparkling, I'm stopping.
Too many adjectives.
All right, everyone, tune in.
Same bat time, same bat channel. Or a deep breath.
Ha 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 it's all recorded. That's so good.
I just lost my shit.
Now, I'm not off permanently. Nice try.
We could never do this without you permanently.
Oh, that that's mean. Sweet of you.
You're the straw that stirs our drink.
Okay. Suddenly, Woody Woodpecker joins we'll see us. You